When you have scientists today and physicists, and I was talking about this earlier in the introduction of the show, all of the free thinkers out there in the world today pretty much agreeing that a multiverse, an alternative reality, a parallel world, parallel universes, string theory, 11 dimensions, it seems to be a commonality now. I don't think they really want to fight each other on this. They want to maybe argue how many dimensions, how many parallel worlds, but what they do seem to agree is that they do exist. And yeah. Is that where you come from?
Oh yeah. Oh, they exist. I believe in multiverse, infinite numbers, if you will.
Right. And why do you think Hollywood today, because I've seen your IMDb page, man. It's nice. Go to mine. You'll see what you used to be. Go to my IMDb page.
Okay.
You used to be like me once. But why is Hollywood okay with it today? I mean, they are okay with pursuing this subject matter, and it seems to be everywhere.
Well, I think because people are open to the possibilities, and maybe it's also social media. You know, the fact is now, instead of going to a library and checking out a book, you can just go to Wikipedia or you can go to different sites, right? And I think it opens up people's minds, people of 2016, let's say, versus when I, you know, like when I was a kid, like 20, 25 years ago, I had to go to the library, right? And it's just much more accessible. So I think Hollywood realizes that. And with the technology of the CGI, especially, they're able to, you know, broaden the horizon and able to make a film that is, quote unquote, more realistic, if you will, dealing with the subject matter.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah. And you go into an investor or you're at some, you know, head of VP of production at a film company and you bring up this subject, chances are, I mean, strong, that they're going to know more than you about it. And it wouldn't have been that way 30 years ago.
No, it isn't. And, you know, it's not to say that films 30 years ago are bad. They're not. They're great. I love films. Look, even 2010 I liked, you know. Not as great as 2001, but I still loved it, you know. Dealing with Europa, dealing with, you know, what if, you know, there's a, you know, a superior alien civilization. You know, and you can't touch Europa. I think that's just fascinating. I mean, now, you know, they're like discovering oceans under, was it Enceladus or Dione? You know, the different moons of Saturn, Jupiter. I mean, it's not just Europa. So, I mean, there's just, who knows? Maybe there's life there. I believe that that's a very strong possibility, you know?
You've just, in that three sentences, talked about everything that we did on this show in the last month.
I love astronomy. I love it. I love it so much. When New Horizons, when it passed by Pluto, oh, I was there. I was glued to my seat.
But that's exactly my point, Russ. Yeah. You're a director in Hollywood. You're out there doing your thing. But your knowledge of this is complete, you know, and your fascination. But it's exactly what the public wants to see. People are aware about these subject matters that were, quite simply, 20, 30 years ago, completely taboo. And today, people actually have knowledge and a foundation in these subjects.
Yeah. I mean, look, was it X-Files? It was revived, right, for season 10. I mean, it wouldn't have been revived if people didn't want it.
Yeah, it kind of sucked, though. Kind of sucked.
Yeah, but it was kind of nice to see them back. In my, you know, I mean, I personally, I'm an X-Files fan, so.
Yeah, me
I was
too.
To my seat. I wish there were more than six episodes, you know, but.
The first episode of the six was pretty solid. It was there. Yeah. It was all right. And I thought, man, this is going to be great. And then it just spun out of control there, man. So anyway, let's take a break right here. Our guest tonight, Russ Emanuel. We're talking about Parallel Worlds and his new film, Occupants. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Fade to Black. Follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. You can follow Russ at Russell Emanuel or Occupants. It'll pop up. We'll be right back. More with Russ. Stay right there.
Fade to Black with Jimmy Church on the Game Changer Radio Network and KGRA, the Global Radio Alliance.
The station that talks the net, KGRA Radio.
Hello, I'm Jimmy, and you're listening to my main man, Jimmy Church, on JimmyChurchRadio.com.
Hi, this is Ray Salves here, repping the planet, and you're listening to my good friend, Jimmy Church, Fade to Black, on the Game Changer Network and the KGRA Digital Broadcast Station.
Angioprim can unclog blocked arteries and improve blood flow in all parts of your body. Angioprim is oral chelation. Easy, simple, liquid oral chelation. You take it with juice before breakfast and forget about it. Angioprim works fast, unlike old-fashioned chelation that takes hours. Just log on to angioprim.com. That's Angioprim, A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M, angioprim.com. Angioprim users say they have more energy, more strength, more endurance. Increased circulation and blood flow will make all your body parts work better. Log on to angioprim.com to get more information on how you can get started and start feeling better, having fun, and doing more again. Lots more. Talk to a trained Angioprim consultant. Call Angioprim toll-free at 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221. Or log on for complete information. Angioprim.com. That's Angioprim.com. Find out how Angioprim can work for you. Get the facts about Angioprim at Angioprim.com.
This is Toby Kebbell. You're listening to JimmyChurchRadio.com.
Don't hurt me, Jimmy. I'm only little.
Hey, I'm Adrian Grenier.
And this is Ari Gold.
We're the Honey Brothers.
Yes.
We are of the Honey Brothers. Hey, I'm Adrian Grenier.
And I'm Ari Gold.
We're the Honey Brothers.
And you're listening to Jimmy Church.
The Revolution.
What's up, Fader Knots? Studio Dumb loves Fade to Black and the F2B audience so much that they have put together the ultimate stereo Bluetooth system. They've done it just for you. Man, check this out. The Studio Dumb SBB2 stereo system is here. It's featuring two Studio Boombox 2 SBB2 wireless Bluetooth speakers packed in its own custom hard shell case. This Studio Dome system features the very latest in stereo Bluetooth technology. The two full-range boomboxes are in true wireless stereo. You've got to hear this. It's amazing. It's just $129, and use the promo code JCRTWS, and you'll also get free shipping. It's simple. Just go to JimmyChurchRadio.com, click on the Studio Dome banner. Go Beckley Tappy.
This is Micah Hanks of the Graylian Report, and you're listening to Jimmy Church on Fade to Black. Across the globe on the Game Changer Radio Network and the one and only KGRA Radio, the planet.
All right, welcome back. Our guest tonight, director Russ Emanuel. We're talking about his new film, Occupants. It's about parallel worlds, my favorite thing. And Russ, before we get back to the film, when you were in film school, who was your favorite director?
Probably Alfred Hitchcock or Steven Spielberg. I even looked up to George Lucas. I loved the original trilogy. You know, this is before the prequel trilogy came out, by the way.
And interesting choices there. All three, you know, very cinematic, very widescreen, very, you know, I hate to use the word epic, but, you know, everything was shot with epic intent, right?
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, I'm definitely in the blockbuster camp. I would love to make a blockbuster film if I can one day. So,
well, and with Occupants, it's shot well, it's framed correctly, it's got a really cool look to it too as well. Do you act as your own DP? Are you telling people what to do, and is the look of the film your responsibility?
Well, it is, but I work with my DP. His name is Emil Harris, and we come together and decide on you know, I guess the feel, like what we're trying to go for. For instance, you know, the parallel world had a different look, a different tint. And so he put on like a green filter. You know, just to give it that, to make it different from the real world, if you will, you know, to show that it truly is a different world. So, yes, this is stuff that you talk with your DP. And, you know, we have extensive conversations, if you will.
Do you have your own director's chair with your name on it? Are you,
are you one of
those guys?
No. I've had friends who have given me those chairs, but to be honest with you, they're kind of uncomfortable. They really are. And the way I like to work is, you know, I would just sit down in whatever chair and, you know, just watch Video Village, which is the monitor. You know, I don't go up to the actors and just watch them, you know, next to the camera. No, I'm sitting with this monitor, and I'm watching the shot composition as well as the acting and lighting and everything else, right? And then I have my script supervisor next to me. For Occupants, was Alexandra Sanders. And, you know, my job is just to overall how I feel, right? Now, let's say I need to make an adjustment with my actors. Then, yeah, you know, I'll cut, and then, you know, I would then stand up and go to them and start talking to them. Like, what if you do this, or what if you do that? Or let's say I want to talk to my DP, you know, about the lighting. But usually, you know, you don't change lighting or anything, like, in between takes or anything, right? This is what you do rehearsals for, camera rehearsals and acting rehearsals. So, you know, we decide, you know, what kind of look. Like in the house that we shot, the haunted house, sometimes, you know, we had to emulate daytime when we're shooting at night. And it required the use of something called an HMI. So, you know, and take some setup time. And then, you know, Harris would be like, Russ, do you like this look? What do you think? And, you know, and then we go back and forth. Now, I would rely on him for a lot of the technicals. Right, the technical terminology, if you will, because it's his department. It's what he does. You know, it's not my job to talk to his gaffer, which is the electrician.
Right.
It's not my job. It's his job. You know, my job is just to talk to him. Then he talks to his crew.
Did you go through 16mm editing back in film school and have reels and go through and edit and splice? And did you go through that too as well? Did you cut your teeth?
Just 8mm.
8mm, same thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so you went through what it takes to actually edit a film and know what the process is.
The bins and clips, and yeah, they still use that term, but it's not the same. It's all digital now.
But that's my point. That's where I'm going with this. So you actually, I mean, there are, can you, you know, this is what's hard for me to wrap my head around is, you know, kids today and directors today that have no idea what it's like to stand in an edit room with film all over your feet and trying to find a take that you need to, that you got to go back and you know, they're in a digital world today, and you need to have an appreciation of both. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And when I went to film school in the 90s in USC Cinema, they were still using 8mm. I talked to some kids today who go to that school, and they're like, they got rid of it. It's all digital.
That's not cool. You know?
No, I don't think it's cool at all. I mean, but I guess that's the reality, is everything's digital now. So, you know.
And you've got the appreciation now of digital, where you get instantaneous playback. You can shoot forever. You can shoot for an hour. You know, if you want to do a 1 hour take, you can. But you went through what it takes to get to that point. Because of the old analog, you know, real film editing days and that experience. And now you know what the freedom is.
No. Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, look, everybody, you know, people used to ask, which is, you know, which you like better, film or digital? You know, I consider them two different mediums. You know, one is celluloid, the other is pixels, right? They're not meant to, I guess, work together, if you will. I mean, a good example, honestly, like when, you know, George Lucas inserted Jabba the Hutt into Star Wars, the first one, It didn't mesh. You know, you have a digital Jabba and 35mm film, I guess it was 35, you know, shot in 77 or 76, I guess. I mean, do you think it works?
Well, this is what I would have done, because I've done that too as well. You know what you do? I swear, Lucas should be listening to me right now. You take the Jabba the Hutt footage, you project it on the wall, and then you film it with film. That's what you do.
That's a very interesting idea.
That's what you do, and then you go and do your edit with real film, and then you get the analog quality of film captured. Now, it's a facsimile, right?
Yeah.
But it is that interneg, if you will. I just said interneg on the air. You like that? You like that?
I love that.
And then it wouldn't be as shocking and maybe almost unnoticeable as it passes through, because the eye sees the analogness of the film, and it's not the digital splice that has occurred.
I agree. I mean, look, I'm not. There are some changes that were made. There were actually pretty good changes. Some of them, you know, not all of them. For instance, he made the Ewoks blink.
Yes.
Did you see that?
Yes.
He made the Ewoks blink.
Right.
And at first I'm like, wow, they never blinked. And I didn't realize it, but it looked okay. You know, I was like, okay.
Well, so there is a situation for me when you go back and you look at all of the films that have been archived and transferred to digital. You can see the film in a digital film, right? Or in a digital transfer. You can see the film quality. You can see it. I mean, The Godfather in a good transfer still looks like film. Right.
Yeah. And, you're talking about when you do a digital intermediate.
Yep. So it still feels like film. And the directors today that still choose to shoot on film, and there's still a few out there that do. It does capture that quality. Then there's other guys like Robert Rodriguez that can make it look good. He is a really good digital guy, and he appreciates digital for what it is, but he still tries to grab that 70 millimeter cinematic effect, and he gets a really good 3D capture, and he frames right. That's my opinion. Maybe I'm over analyzing this, but that's what I think.
Depending on the filmmaker, different filmmakers could do different things with, you know, whatever medium you're using, whether it's digital or film. It's very subjective, I think, you know.
You also have the ability. Man, I feel like I interrupted you. Did I interrupt you?
No. Go
okay,
ahead, please.
Okay. The beauty of digital also is you can retake the crap out of a scene, right?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
You're not worried about expense. You're not worried about cost, and you don't have to worry about your dailies going back. See, I know way too much, but I love film. I love film. And with digital, now that's the other aspect. Today's directors like yourself can sit there and make sure that they get the scene that they need to get, and they're not worried about expenses or cost.
Well, you know, there is cost, though. Like, look, I'm doing this new film, right, with Robert Picardo called The Assassin's Apprentice. And I'm talking with the DP of this new film. Ray Carlo is his name. Mm-hmm. And we have to shoot. We're shooting in 4K. And 4K is what? Double the HD resolution, I guess, if, you know, to use just more consumer terms.
Right.
HD, that's 1920 by 1080 Blu-ray, right?
Right.
But then you double that, right? Well, you need it takes a lot of storage. I mean, you're talking gigabytes, right? And if you're shooting a feature, I mean, how many external hard drives do you need to store it on, right? And then you always want a backup, right? What if your primary drives crash? You know, it's happened to me before.
Interesting. What'd you do?
You know what? It did crash for the visual effects. This is a post for Nathaya. And I had to redo. I was doing some of the visual effects shots myself. I had to redo it. I just had to go back from scratch. I lost like several months of work. But what else could I do?
And also, I wanted to talk to you about the editing in Occupants. Are you hands-on there?
Look, I trust my editor, Emil Harris. Again, I've worked with him on many, many films, including, you mentioned, Girl with Gun. I mean, he cut that. He cut pretty much all my feature films. So I trust him. And then what happens is once he does a first cut, then I see it. The producer, Howard Nash, sees it. And, you know, we come in and the investors see it. And then we, you know, talk about it. You could be tightened up here or, you know, what if you do this over here and stuff like that, right? And then we just go back and forth, you know, second cut, third cut, fourth cut, like that. But, you know, I don't want to be so hands-on that it's like I'm, like, just, you know, looking over his shoulder and making him feel claustrophobic. So I give him the leeway.
Have you ever had to sacrifice? Have you had to give in to the money?
Well, you mean what? Like compromising?
Yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking about, Russ.
Yeah, look, Chasing the Green, it's a film that I did with Howard, and it had what, Jeremy London, Ryan Hurst, William Devane, and Picardo, again, Robert Picardo. I had to combine two shoot days into one. I had to do it, and this, we're already, what, I don't know, 17 days into the shoot. Yeah, I there are times you have to do that. You have no choice.
And what about in an edit where you liked something one way? Maybe the edit was making it funny. Maybe the edit was making it more serious. Maybe there was a jump. Maybe there wasn't. But you had your vision, and somebody else has theirs. And yeah. Have you compromised there?
Sometimes.
Yeah, you really don't want to say, do you? It's tough. It's tough as a director, I get it.
We're making films that, you know, we're trying to make money, right? It's an art. Don't get me wrong. It's definitely an art, and I can go on and on why I love film. I love film. I just love it. John Williams, composer. Do you know John Williams?
Of course.
Incredible composer. His music is one reason I'm a filmmaker now, and I can just, you know, I was watching the Chateau fight in the Matrix Reloaded, and right, the way it was choreographed with the music and everything. And that's another thing about, you know, is this a real reality that we're in? By the way, we can go into that topic.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm prepping for this new Assassin's Apprentice film, by the way. And, you know, I'm watching this, and it's a dance. It's a choreography, you know, it's just beautiful, you know, that's why I'm a filmmaker. So, but at the same time, I do realize it's also a business because, you know, we want our investors to be happy, right? You know, to recoup their costs, their expenses, and to make money. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to balance the two. And, you know, I am answerable to my producer, and I trust him when it comes to the business side. So, you know, if he says, Russ, trust me, I do trust him, you know. For instance, we purposely didn't have any F words in the film, or didn't mention certain controversial topics, although in the original script there was.
Right.
But I, you know, the producer's like, we're trying to sell to a certain market, and by saying this, it's going to cut us off.
Yeah, so, I always, you know, it's, you know what's weird, and this is, it's kind of come down to, I would rather see a rated R film. Right. I would rather see that because I know that there's more artistic freedom there. And
when
I see a PG film, I know that it's been choked back and it's been compromised and they're trying to get to the largest audience. And I understand all of the reasons for it. But I also see a restriction in artistic freedom. And I know that with an R-rated film, I'm going to be something that's a little bit closer to reality.
Yeah, like it's the artist in me and the businessman in me, you know, they fight with each other. You know, you're talking about parallel versions.
Yeah, that's exactly right. No.
It's a balancing act. It's so subjective. I mean, look, you know, I'm dealing with film festivals, right? And some like it, some don't. But it's very subjective. You know, at Shriekfest, we're up for a Best Film nomination. I mean, you know, but at another horror fest, they said no. I'm not going to name the one, but, you know, they did say no. It just wasn't their cup of tea. So it's so subjective. And I take that into account. And I'm a collaborator, so I trust my producer. I trust Howard. I trust my DP. I trust my composer. I trust everybody. I trust the actors. You know, I mean, I want them to have the most natural performance. You know, I trust the writer, Julia, you know.
Right. You said you had said that that the house was haunted and some strange things happened. What happened?
Well, okay, the house we got, it's a beautiful house. It's almost 100 years old, and they completely remodeled the inside, but I think the plumbing and the structure itself is original. So the house has history, right? It's a house that we shot just south of the, if you know Los Angeles, the Cedars-Sinai Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And north of the 10 freeway. So it's in that area. I don't know what it's called. It's not Mid-Wilshire, but yeah.
Anyways, Beverly, it's Beverly, Beverly Hills, Mid-Wilshire.
Could it be around there? I guess, yeah. I mean, it was a beautiful house, and we got it through Airbnb, and we literally owned the house for, I don't know, it was 12 days or something. So, and I was staying there. I was actually staying in the makeup room. That was my bedroom. That's why that room is never opened in the film. And the excuse is that's the husband's room. That's his office. So, yeah, I was staying there. And, you know, several days, some of my friends were staying there too, including Eric Kask was staying there. My friend Jack Roth, who's one of the still photographers. I think Janine Berryman might have seen her. She's another still photographer. And then what it is when we were shooting, there was this one room. It was the bedroom, the main bedroom. And people kept hearing things in there, like somebody coughing, but there was nobody there.
Interesting.
Or they felt a wind, or the lights were dimming. In the film, you actually see physically, you see the light dimming in one shot. I'm not going to name which one, but we didn't do that.
Really?
Whether it was faulty plumbing, and by the way, there was faulty plumbing because the main bathroom, it didn't work. I mean, it worked for like 3 days, and then we had it clogged up something with the plumbing. It was just really bad. And we had to get there was another working bathroom in the main bedroom, and that was the main one, and then we got a porta potty from Andy Gump. Fortunately, and this is a true story, okay? I did see, by the way, the dishwasher turned on by itself, and that I was like, whoa, what happened there? Now, 8 days into the shoot, I did mention that sometimes people were staying there with me, right?
Right.
Well, guess what? For two of those days, and it happened to be right towards the end, I was by myself in this house, and I had to go to the bathroom at 2 a.m. And do you think I'm going to use the porta potty? No,
right.
I'm going to go into the bathroom where the ghost is living.
Right, of course.
So what I did was I turned on every single light in the house before I went into that bathroom.
Smart.
I was kind of freaking out. Look, I'm 8 days into shooting a film, right? And we have pretty long days, right? So my nerves are pretty frayed by this point. So, yeah. I survived. I'm here. I hope I did not offend the ghost. I didn't mean to.
how has the response been at Comic-Con?
Oh, it's been good. It's been really good. I mean, look, they gasp at the right times. They laugh at the right times. And I cannot spoil it, but every single time at these certain junctures, every single time, they always gasp or laugh or go, oh. And then I'm talking grown men will go, ah, I've heard it. I was there in an audience. It was at San Antonio it happened, you know. And I think at the Downtown Los Angeles Film Festival it happened. So, you know, the reception is really good, and I'm very happy about that, you know. I mean, this is really strange, by the way. At my first event, it was, Farpoint, in Maryland. I met some great people, Lakita Edwards, Mark B. Lee. Mark B. Lee, by the way, is kind of like, he's like an MC for various Comic-Cons dealing with Star Trek actors.
Right.
And he's really pretty well known. I met him, and I met Pat and Lisa Spanagel. Anyway, there, right, was the first public screening of the film, because we completed that December of last year. And we had a private screen at the Writers Guild, right? But they're like friends and family. And, yeah, they said, oh, it's great. Everything's great. But I'm like, well, they're friends and family, you know. Won't they just say that because they're friends and family? So this was the first time people I had no idea. You know, I don't know any of them. I've never been to Maryland in my life, right? This is the first public screening. So I was very nervous. And it happened to be on the day, by the way, that Antonin Scalia died.
That was
breaking news right before my film screening. So, of course, everybody's focusing on that and not my film, right? But the people that did show up, a lot of people did show up. The reaction was, I was shocked. It was really good. And the best reaction was from a 13-year-old girl. And she was with her mother, right? And she went completely gaga over this film. And I was like, whoa, really? Because that wasn't the target audience I was going for. I was going for like 20-something, you know, a young couple. That's what I thought would resonate the best. But it happened. It's this 13-year-old girl. And it happened at the Phoenix Comic Con. Another 13-year-old girl with her father. She again went gaga over this film.
And the other thing that happens when you are at these cons and people see the film, they come up and inevitably they'll go, you know, I've been to a parallel world. This is exactly what it's like. Do you find they just come up and everybody is relating to it in sometimes a very strange way?
Yeah, look, here's how they relate to it. They start to doubt themselves. It happens. It happens so much after they watch the film, and they keep saying they can't sleep at night. And again, I cannot spoil the film. If I do, then you know it gives it away. But let's just say it kept people up at night. They couldn't go to sleep. They kept the lights on. I've heard this from several people.
Do you find that I mentioned this in the intro of the show? In this craziness that we're in today, I mean, the world is as nutty as it's ever been. We're in the middle of the craziest presidential race in the history of the known universe. Everything just seems a little bit strange and off kilter. The news is weird. We have, you know, these crazy situations with the police and racism and protests across the, it just feels a little bit strange. And do you think that we're just in this parallel reality right now?
It's possible. Look, I was talking The Matrix, right? What if we're all just plugged in? We just don't know it. And there's just so many possibilities. You know, I think social media has made everything just a lot more open. And like you could communicate with somebody in another country very easily now, right? By Skype. You know, I'll tell you this. I was doing the composer for this for Occupants is Vasilis Meleses. He was living in Spain when he was doing the score for the film. I didn't meet him in person until, was it like 1 year after the score was completed at the Florida Supercon. He's living there now in Miami with his wife. That's the first time I met him. Social media. I mean, we're able to transfer files that are like 2 gigabytes big, right? So you're talking about the craziness? I think it's because of social media. I think because everything's so interactive and easy. And then you can look at people's comments on certain blogs. You know, I mean, I don't want to get into politics, but, you know, you can go to, you know, whatever political site, right, and see the comments, right? And you can reply to it if you want.
Right.
And it's just so much easier. You could not have done this during, let's say, I don't know, Nixon versus Kennedy. You know?
Yeah.
That was the first, televised the debates. This first time it was televised, right?
Right.
And back then that was new, but, you know, I meant you couldn't, like, Twitter something, right? I mean, Twitter seems to be very popular now.
When we come, yes, it does. It's definitely part of my world. We're going to take a break right here. And when we come back, I want to continue exactly this thought about our digital world, our digital universe that is today. It is indeed our reality. And are we plugged into the Matrix? And if we are, how do we unplug? Our guest tonight, Russ Emanuel. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Fade to Black. We'll be right back.
Way out here, we listen to Jimmy Church.
You're listening to Fade to Black.
Always on the edge of the hottest alternative talk. Jimmy Church with Fade to Black. KGRARadio.com.
¿Qué tal, mis amigos? Yo soy Mario Carson, el tiburón. Y los invito para que escuchen mi buen amigo Jimmy Church Radio. ¡Claro que sí!
This
statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Work with your doctor when taking medications. Make Protovite part of your healthy lifestyle.
HealthForLiberty.com is your source for Protovite, a powerful nutritional supplement that's a true breakthrough for your health. Poor digestion makes it nearly impossible to absorb the nutrition your body needs. Protovite is a liquid multi-nutrient formula with patent-pending absorption technology and the highest quality ingredients to nourish every cell in your body.
My name is Sandra White. 6 weeks ago, when I started taking Protovite, I was on 14 medications, from everything for blood pressure to fibromyalgia. In the first 10 days, my blood sugar dropped 50 points, and my fibromyalgia pain is gone. And so was 12 of the 14 medications that I was taking. I'm 66, living life, and loving it.
Go to healthforliberty.com right now. That's healthforliberty.com.
Thank you, Protovite, for giving my life back.
You are listening to Fade to Black with Jimmy Church on the Game Changer Network.
Oi, oi, I'm Rhys Evans. You're listening to Jimmy Church. This is Revolution. The Revolution will not be televised. The Revolution is on radio. Ciao.
Fade to Black, our guest tonight, Russ Emanuel, and we're talking about, well, filmmaking, his newest film, Occupants, which deals with parallel worlds. And right before the break, Russ, you brought up a very interesting point. That is, how do we know if we're plugged into the Matrix? And I'm just going to say this, you know digital technology, you know how good CG has become. 3D worlds, virtual reality glasses and goggles and AR and AI. It's all a reality today. How do you know, Russ, that you are not living in a digital world? I mean, what would you have to do to prove to yourself that you're not?
Oh, by the way, it's funny you mentioned Google Glasses, because we're using something like that in the new film. And you can actually go to the Kickstarter page, just type in Assassin's Apprentice. But yeah, we deal with that. How do we know that we're not living? I don't know. That's the thing. You know, I mean, in Buddhism, right?
Yes.
It's taught that this whole world is not real. And once you accept that, then you enter nirvana, right? And I think the Matrix took that concept. And they played with it. It's kind of funny that Keanu Reeves was Neo, because he was also Buddha in a film like a couple of years before that. So I thought that was kind of amusing. How do I know? I don't know. That's the thing. That scares me.
I mean,
I have no idea.
It has gotten that good. It really, really has. And I don't know. Sometimes I wonder when I talk to a lot of scientists and a lot of physicists and researchers on this subject, and when you get down to the basics of things like positives and negatives, electricity, the universe, what is composing everything, right? That and if you strip down everything to just that, you don't know. You really don't know. Everything could be just a mere projection.
Well, think about this. The transporter technology in Star Trek. You're literally destroying yourself and creating a new version of yourself.
That's right.
So is that really you? I mean, is that really Captain Kirk that comes out on the other side?
You remember when Tupac, right, was out? If you think about,
I love his new album.
Yeah,
it came out, didn't it?
Yeah.
Dead for 20 years.
Yeah, it's
funny what you can do.
Yeah, it's amazing. And if you think about that, it's not a step away from. I'll give you another example. You know what DARPA is working on right now. This is what is frightening. Is no different than you capturing a digital image, storing it on a card, downloading it in the edit bay, and working on your edits. And now you're working on a screen that is actually a representation of reality. You're looking at it, right? You're looking at another reality on the screen and editing it. DARPA, right now is their thing. Their very focus is to download consciousness and to be able to get a computer to interface and getting an interface built that will communicate and manipulate a computer. And that's their goal, to be able to download you, Russ Emanuel, onto a USB drive and hand it to your wife. Right? Now, how scary is that? Because you could then plug in that USB drive into your computer, and now you are living inside of your computer. And how do you know the difference?
That's a very good question. Look, what was that film that dealt with that? With the Johnny Depp film? I wish it was better. Transcendence?
Oh, it was actually pretty cool. Right.
Yeah. But the concept was amazing. I mean, I think about that seriously. You know, I mean, in the olden days, it's what, a brain in this canister or something.
Sure.
Right. But no, I mean, think about it. If you can be digitally stored, I don't know. I mean, is that, and that brings up a whole new set of questions. Is that really you? Or is that a digital copy of you? You can copy yourself.
One of the greatest films of all time was the original Tron.
Oh, I love that.
You know what? That's it. I'm watching that after the show tonight. I'm going to go watch. I'm going to find me Tron.
Before you go on, I would watch Tron, but I have to still binge watch Fringe.
Yeah, man. So now this is where the concept goes one step further. You need to travel interstellar space, right? Build a spaceship. We've got the technology. This thing can fly now for 1,000,000 years, but you can't put a human on it, right? Mm-hmm. Do you put the Robinson family on it and let them procreate for 1,000,000 years until they get somewhere, right? Get to Proxima B 4.5 light years from now or what have you. But what's the answer for that? You download your consciousness into the space, and that's it. You're alive forever. You're making human decisions. You're flying, and then when you get to where you're going, download that into a robot or a
human.
Clone.
You could just
or
have a human. You could clone. Yeah, you can clone yourself
now.
Clone your body.
Isn't that nuts? And we are there, man. We are so close. Do you know who Michio Kaku?
No,
okay.
I have to say no.
He's a Japanese physicist, that theorist, I should say. He's got a lot of TV shows and stuff, and he does this. You've seen him. He's Japanese, got long gray hair. You've seen him 1,000,000 times.
Yes, and as a half Japanese man, I love that name.
Right. So he comes on this show. He's a cool dude. He's cool. A little uptight, but he's cool. And he comes on the show and he goes, Jimmy, I'm telling you right now, we can download consciousness right now. And if that is where we are, I don't know how many terabytes of information that is. I really don't. But that is a scary thought, that you would not know the difference, you know, dancing around inside of a computer. You would not know. If you died and your consciousness was safe, you wouldn't even know that you died.
Well, technically, I guess you didn't die.
Right. That's absolutely nuts to wrap my head around. It is.
No, you're completely correct. I mean, you know, our humanoid body, it's a horrible vessel for long-term space travel. you know? I mean, we require so much maintenance, right? That I think what you're talking about is much more viable, you know?
Yeah, food.
That's what I think.
Food.
Yeah, we need food. We need exercise. We get sick. I mean, the body, it's just really, it's not made for traveling in interstellar space. It's just not made for that.
And speaking of this matrix, then we have what you had mentioned earlier. We have the internet. We have 24-hour television. We have the Big Brother manipulation of the media today. How do you think that influences society as a whole? And do you pay much attention to it, or are you disconnected from the machine?
Well, I try to look at everybody's point of view, you know, and then I create my own consensus, if you will. You know, so I wouldn't just listen to this one person versus that, you know, that person. I'd listen to everybody, and then I'd be like, okay, so I kind of try to create, you know, I don't know, just my own subjective take on it. That's what I would do. Because there's just so much out there now, right?
Well,
who knows what's real?
Yeah, it comes at you from all directions. And then,
yeah, it's ridiculous.
And then we have the flip side to that, which is Hollywood. And
Hollywood.
The one thing, the one guarantee, right? Here, I'm going to help you get your next film deal right now. Right?
Thank you.
Okay, this is how you do it. Write a film about aliens. That's how you get it greenlit. Does it got aliens? Do they attack Earth? Do we defend Earth? And why is it that Hollywood is okay with doing an alien blockbuster film twice a month, year in and year out?
People love aliens. I love aliens. I'll do an alien film. That's it. Occupants 2 will be about aliens.
Yeah. You know,
you just convinced me. Thank you.
Well, why do you think that is? I mean, yeah, people like aliens. Okay, that's probably a small part of it. Is there a message? Do you think Hollywood knows something that we don't know? Washington is involved?
I think we all want to think that we're not alone. Because imagine humans are the only intelligent species, and let's say the only species, or you know what I mean? The Earth is the only planet with living species. You know how depressing that is?
That is very depressing.
I mean, in this big, vast universe, I'm talking vast. I mean, I cannot comprehend the size of the universe. I don't think anybody can. No human beings can. We cannot. It's hard for us to comprehend time. You know, we think in what, maybe centuries? But try to think in, you know, in millions of years, billions. It's just not possible. Our minds just are not suited to comprehend that. So I think for people, they want to believe. That's the same, right, from the X-Files? I want to believe. Well, I think they do, that there's the possibility that there's others out there, and we're not alone. That's what I think.
The frightening thought about the size of the universe and talking about the possibility of multiverse is this. When you, I don't know where you live, but you're here in Hollywood somewhere, right? And you go up to the roof of the tallest building around you and take a look around and you see the edge of your known world, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not all there is, but that's all you can see.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, mm-hmm. if you go out to the edge of where you can see, now what happens? You can see further, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. You follow that concept. Now, you take that same concept into the universe idea. Well, we can only see so far from Earth, right? Where is the edge of the universe? Well, we only know as far as we can see, right? And that's it. But if you go out to the edge of everything that we can see, what are you going to see from there? More.
I don't know.
Right?
Well, here's another. I agree.
And you can do that forever.
And that's the scary thing there. It's just, it will drive you crazy. It really will. Think about this. The Andromeda Galaxy, we're looking at it from 2 million years ago. I mean, in present day, it may not even exist now.
That's
right. We don't know.
No. We only see the light that was created. See, that's the thing. And that's the other part where most people don't really understand time. But if you really want to know the age of the universe, go out and look at the stars. Well, where you are seeing the light, you're seeing time travel. You're seeing light that is billions of years old. You know, it's like, wrap your mind around that.
A lot of people can't. I mean, that's why they just think the here and now, because it's, for a lot of people, it's kind of like living in the Matrix then, right? You just don't want to think about reality, so you just live in this fantasy. That's what the Matrix is, if you think about it, you know? You just want to be ignorant, right? It was that one character, Cypher. He just wants to be ignorant again, and you know, he just wants to forget everything about the real world. And I think a lot of people are like that, and I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm saying that it's I think the human mind is trying to protect itself.
Well, and if you think about it, Agent Anderson was the same way, right?
Oh, Mr. Anderson! I love that guy, by the way, Hugo Weaving. That was a great guy.
Man, he was. Yeah. We've had our eye on you for quite some time now, Mr. Anderson. You help your landlady take out her garbage. Love Hugo Weaving. Love Hugo Weaving.
Oh, he's so good.
But
it is inevitable, Mr. Anderson. And he always says that, Mr. Anderson.
But he brought up a point in the film when he was holding up the red meat. Right? Mm-hmm. I see it. I see it. I know that it tastes, whatever, you know, it's juicy.
He knows it's fake. He knows it's fake. But he doesn't care.
It's such an interesting concept with that, and what is reality and what isn't. And so I want to swing you back to Hollywood when you brought up us being alone in the universe, how depressing that would be. And it used to be, if we found out that there were aliens, right, that the idea was that there would be anarchy, religions would collapse, the economy would go away, we would burn up and we would riot and we'd kill ourselves. It's not really that kind of party today with the people of Earth. I don't think that they would be as freaked out as we would think.
It's social media. I mean, we're just too interconnected now. You know, we know it's a different world. This isn't the world. I remember when I went to USC for the first year. I'm dating myself, by the way. It was 1995, my first year in school. And it's the first time I got the internet. Did you know back then I did not even want the internet?
No, I didn't understand it. Right.
I didn't understand it. I didn't want to learn something new. Now I'm just like, I can't get enough of the internet. The internet's great. But, you know, it's a different world. I mean,
you know what I did? You know what?
You can see more now than you could, let's say, 20 years ago. That's what I think.
So I was trying to figure out the internet, right? And I get, you know, I forget how I signed on and it might, you know, whatever. But I get on. This is like 95. AOL 1.0. And I remember trying to get to trying to get to the web. I was trying to get out of AOL and onto the web, right? I wanted to get out of AOL and onto the web. And I finally did it somehow, which none of that even matters. But I typed in to the, it wasn't even a browser, but I typed in www.UFO.com. Right? That was my search. Not sex, not porn.com. I went to UFO.com to see what would happen. And that was the beauty of the internet back then. It was, I wanted it. I wanted to get out there and try to, I had heard the rumors, you know, and I heard these things about what was out there. And that's what I did. I went to UFO. That's what I did for a year.
Well, I'll tell you this. I just looked it up while you were talking. I think it's available.
UFO.com?
Yeah.
Rita, you heard it.
I may be wrong, but it looks like you could buy it.
How much do they want for UFO.com?
I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know but it's like it's showing related links. And every time they do something like that, I know it's like it can't be real.
Now, so do you think that Hollywood and the internet is responsible for our non-fear now of aliens. You know,
I think it's a strong argument. Yeah.
Are you afraid?
No.
So do you think that ET is here today? Do you think that they have visited this planet?
I think there's a theory that some of the genetic material came from Mars and it populated Earth. Do you know that theory?
I do, of course. Talk about it all the time.
I think we probably could be extraterrestrial. I mean, I already know that we're part Neanderthal. They did DNA tests, right? About 4% of us. So why couldn't it be? Well, you know, back in the early days, there was more collisions, right, in our solar system.
There's some out there that would say that I'm half Neanderthal, no doubt.
Well, I think football players are all Neanderthals. They're big. Well, they're big and strong, and they're like, ah!
Well, Stephen Hawking came out again last week. He did a post. He did a video, 30-minute video, where he once again said we should not try to contact ET. We don't need to let them know we are here. Because if they find out we are here, bad things are going to happen. What do you think about that when Stephen Hawking says something like that?
I mean, I guess he has a point. But, isn't it too late? How many we've been sending, television signals, radio signals since what was it? The 1936 Olympics?
You're a smart man, Russ.
Oh.
No, you're smart. You're smart. You're absolutely right. Way, way too late. And we can't turn that back.
No, it's out there for the whole universe, literally. I mean, it will keep traveling forever, basically. So
when you go in your backyard, are you bothered by spraying bug spray before you have company come over? Do you care about the insects and their families and the little baby insects whose parents you are killing? Do you concern yourself with that?
Sometimes, yeah. And you know what? It's funny you say that because I just had LASIK surgery last year. And before then, I was really, really blind, like legally blind. You know, I literally could only see like really close to my, to my face. I was like -8. Then it dawned on me after I got LASIK and I was, taking a shower. I'm going, how many insects have I drowned not even realizing it? Because, I couldn't see, right? And I don't wear my glasses in the shower.
Right.
So, yeah, it does bother me. And then, I know you have termite control and all that. But, yeah, you are killing. And I do try to save insects if I can, like arachnids. Oh, arachnids, they're not insects, but you know what I mean.
Arachnid. A spider's an insect, isn't it?
Is it? It's an arachnid, right? Not an insect. Look, you know what really? It's this film. The one with Rick Moranis. He shrunk. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Right.
And then I remember the ant, and I felt so bad for that ant. You know what I'm talking about?
I do. And so the question is, would E.T. look at us the same way if he's a million years advanced? And we would look and appear to him like earthworms.
I would hope that these aliens are more in the spirit of Gene Roddenberry's vision than, let's say, Independence Day.
Right.
And I would hope that they would treat us with benevolence and realize that we are still very premature, if you will. So I just hope. I'm an optimist. I tend to be an optimist by nature. So that's what I want to believe.
You know what was a good film? I'm trying to think of his name. The movie Evolution. Do you remember that?
Evolution?
I'm trying to think of the black guy that was the star. Sean William Scott was the co-star.
With David Duchovny.
Yeah, David Duchovny.
He was
great.
Yeah, I remember this film. This film is 15. Wow, it's 15 years old now.
Yeah, back when you were in film school. Don't say that anymore. I'm a lot older than you. But
No. I was out of film school already.
But that's that is also an interesting concept about what an alien invasion would be like.
Yeah.
Right. Self-replicating amoebas, single cell that perform millions of years of evolution in minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting concept.
Yeah. No, it's very interesting. I'll get back to Interstellar. Remember how there was a time variance?
Yes.
Between them on the surface of one planet versus, being in space. I mean, there's just so many possibilities. That's what I love. This is why I love this stuff, you know? And that's why I loved making Occupants. It's fascinating. It really is just so fascinating because you really can go in every which direction you want. It's very unpredictable, you know?
How cautious do you have to be as a director to watch your message? You know, Stanley Kubrick in his films, also in Interstellar, too, there was a message there, but people took it so many different ways. And Kubrick was really good at that. In fact, people left his films wondering what they just saw. They didn't really understand the multiple messages that were there. How careful do you have to be with that?
With multiple messages? Well,
yeah.
I like to let the audience decide. I don't like to tell them. I want the audience to make up their own mind. They're like, well, what do you think? I'm like, well, what I think is what I think. But, you know, it's up to you to make up your own decisions.
Is that okay?
That's okay for me. I don't know about another director, but that's okay for me.
So you know? When somebody comes up to you and goes, hey, man, your film changed my life. How do you respond to that? Do you tell them, be careful? I made the film for me. I didn't make it for you. Don't let it change your life. Enjoy it. But
I look, I'm an entertainer, right? I just hope that people were entertained and they were able to take their mind, this 81 minutes, right? For 81 minutes of their life, they can de-stress, not think about work or, you know, health problems or whatever. Just for 81 minutes, they can just enjoy. That's what I want people to get out of my films. I just want them to enjoy themselves.
Before I let you go, do you want to hang on and maybe take some phone calls?
Sure. Okay.
Okay. We'll open up the phone lines right after this break. 323-825-5045. Going back to Kubrick and his vision, I know that you've heard the rumors that Kubrick helped fake the moon landings.
Yeah.
Right? Do you think that that is possible? And did you go back and actually look at Kubrick's work and wonder if he could have participated in that? And would a director sacrifice himself for something like that?
Are you talking like 2001, right before the moon landings?
Well, okay.
That film came out in 68.
That film,
moon landings were 69.
That's right. Okay. Well, the urban legend here is that for one reason or another, just in case we didn't make it to the moon, we needed to fake like we were actually there. So they used Kubrick to go and shoot all of the stuff on the moon. In case we didn't make it, we could still show the Soviets that we were there and we would do the test, right?
That's a very interesting theory. I actually never thought about that. Wow. What comes to mind? Do you remember the film Diamonds Are Forever?
Absolutely.
James Bond. And then they literally went through a moon set. Do you remember that? And then even after they were found out, the astronauts kept going in slow motion, which I thought was very hilarious.
Yes.
I don't know. It's a possibility. I don't know. I mean, I want to believe that we did land on the moon. I mean, by the way, I think it's kind of pathetic that we haven't gotten back.
Well, one would have to say why.
I don't know. And look, again, I'm very Gene Roddenberry in my look. I really want to believe we went to the moon, and then we saw that we were there, and then you could see a flag, and I'm sure the flag, if you touch it, will fall apart, won't it, with all the UV radiation? It's probably all faded by now.
You're a smart guy, Russ. You have no
idea. I try. Look, I want to believe. I want to believe. I'm an optimist. So I want to believe in humanity. That, yeah, I understand why we went to the moon. It was a Soviet race. But at the same time, the exploration, the explorers in us, you know? It's what, I guess, like Christopher Columbus or the Vikings or whoever, you know, just discovering new places. That's what I want to believe.
Somebody just posted, we're going to take a break right here. Oh, Dennis just posted that UFO.com is for sale for $7,184. Our guest tonight, director Russ Emanuel. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Fade to Black. We'll be right back. Stay right there. Taking your phone calls, 323-825-5045.
Hi, everybody. This is Rob Halford, the Metal God, on JimmyChurchRadio.com. KGRA Radio. Intelligent talk.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store. So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
If your home has hard water, then it's likely that Limescale is clogging your pipes, damaging your appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars each year. You can eliminate Limescale in the entire house with HydroCare products available at Wave Home Solutions. Easy and efficient with no maintenance, no salts, no chemicals, and no coils. And you can buy with confidence from Wave Home Solutions. Performance guaranteed. Just go to bestwater411.com. That's bestwater411.com.
Did you know that when you're on the road with limited data or Wi-Fi available, you can still listen to every minute of Fade to Black by just calling 605-562-4482. No smartphone, app, or internet needed. It saves your data plan and no extra cost if you have unlimited minutes. Just call 605-562-4482. You can listen to me, Jimmy Church, on any phone, anytime, anywhere. Go Beckley Tappy.
You want to know a secret? I love ponies. I really love ponies. I'm serious. I couldn't stay sane without ponies to brush.
Why fade to black? Because you never got that pony, damn it.
This is Fade to Black with Jimmy Church on the Game Changer Radio Network and KGRA, the Global Radio Alliance.
Welcome back, Fade to Black. You can follow me right now on Twitter at J Church Radio. You can follow Russ Emanuel at Russell Emanuel. That's all you got to do. You can do occupants too as well. And opening up the phone lines, 323-825-5045. Russ, I wanted to talk to you about casting. And now I know you use Robert all the time, and that's great. But how do you cast? How do you choose?
Well, you know, I meant Robert is pretty much, you know, it's kind of like the producer's venue, if you will. He's the one who knows Robert and these other actors. At the same time, for occupants. What did we do? Well, for the lead actress, we held an extensive audition process through my friend Alex DeLerma's Cinema Gym. He allowed us to, cast there, basically.
Right.
And then we put out an ad, I think it was a casting call on some other sites, and we picked 27 actresses. And I had the lead actor who was already cast, Michael. He was there. The DP was there because I wanted to see, whether the actress was photogenic, you know, for the camera.
Right.
So what I did then is we had lines, sometimes just by herself, themselves, or with Michael. And then based on that, those 27 actresses have been called back, like six or so. And then at that point, then, you know, we decided on the actress. Although I have to admit, I kind of knew who it would be after seeing her on day one of the audition.
So you didn't,
quite obvious, Brianna.
You didn't know Brianna before the casting?
Nope.
Wow, that's cool. How about Michael?
Nope. No, but I did know Bob. I love to work with new people as much as I like to work with people I've worked with before. That's the fun part of it, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's very fun. I grew up playing Legos and, you know, building puzzles, and I just like constructing things and, you know, creating this world, and the actors, they're the warmth, you know, the feeling, I guess, you know, and same thing with the composer, but they bring the warmth, I guess, to the project. Without them, there would be no film. You know, they're the focal point, right? So, you know, and I guess I hope I'm good at, you know, trying to feel it, you know,
right.
When I feel a performance. I hope people, you know, when they see the film, that they think so.
I've got a question here. Jimmy, please ask Russ, does a relationship exist between dimensional consciousness and one's state of well-being?
Dimensional consciousness and one state of well-being.
Yes.
What would that be? That would be like our well-being versus different consciousness put together?
Yeah, does a relationship...
Like the Gaia theory? I'm a little...
Yeah,
a little...
actually, you're close. And I guess this is, you know, in response to your comments about Buddha.
Oh, you mean basically attaining a state of nirvana? Well, the Gaia theory is, I mean, that was in, was it Asimov's novels, the Foundation novels?
Yes.
If you remember those, yeah. It's basically, we're all interconnected together. I guess it's kind of like the Borg. That would be kind of scary. So what do I think about, I guess, being able to experience your thoughts and everybody's thoughts? I don't know. It'd be interesting. You know, we definitely would not be alone. But at the same time, maybe sometimes you want to be alone, right? I don't know.
Yeah. And well, I do find it interesting. See, this is one of the things that I think that all of us are becoming more and more aware of today. And that is this. That all consciousness, everybody, we are all connected. There's no question about it. And you can see the ebb and flow around the world from responses to a lot of these negative things that are going on around the world right now. You have, you know, I mean, to think about what the shift in consciousness that went down overnight in Paris, or like the effect of 9/11 on New York City and the rest of the country, right? It kind of flows out from there. And we've got that occurring now globally, and it shifts. It shifts when something gets posted on CNN or on Twitter, or there's a movement of things from stuff in when somebody gets 5 million views in a week on YouTube. That's a shift in consciousness. And we can see that the ebb and flow of the negativity and what little positive that we have left that goes on out there. It happens every day.
You know what's funny? I meant you're talking about, like, let's say, like twins. I think they share consciousness because they think alike.
Right.
You know,
right.
I think they can feel each other. So I, on a bigger scale, like Gaia. Yeah. I think that's very possible.
And Jordan just tweeted, what's your opinion on deja vu and parallel universes?
What's my opinion on deja vu? I think deja vu is possible. Now, whether it's like a hiccup in the Matrix, that was deja vu, right? I don't know. I mean, it's I've experienced deja vu before. I think everybody has. So are we is it a blip in the timeline? I don't know. You know? But I have definitely experienced deja vu.
And when it happens to you, what do you think is going on? Because I understand the blip in the universe thing, but at that moment, you are experiencing it. And obviously, you're conscious and you're aware that it is happening. What do you think is going on?
You know, I just saw an episode of Fringe where something happened and then it happened again. It was just in the season 4, and it was something to do with the time variances. What do I think? I think really outside the box. I guess I think about everything. What might be possible. I don't know.
Does it freak you out?
I got an answer.
Yeah.
Does it freak me out? Sometimes.
I mean, because it seems like somebody has read your timeline, right? Somebody is aware of what is about to happen. And you know that this is about to happen. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're live on Fade to Black.
Hey, good evening, Jimmy. It's Dino. Russ, I have a question about you since you're around the Hollywood filmmaking scene. You mentioned earlier about, the types of movies and getting a producer and all that. I'm wondering, what are your feelings about it? And if you really go out on a limb and you deal with, like, really esoteric stuff, I mean, some of the things we talk about on this program that are kind of out there, if I know it's all about the money, but would you be ostracized if you really went out and started talking some truths, even though you put them in entertainment form in a film? Would you be ostracized, or do you think that there's a big enough market to carry these films today?
Well, I mean, look at The Matrix, and that was really out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it spawned, what, 2 sequels? What do you call it? A comic book? I don't know. I mean, it made, what, $1 billion? So, the tastes are very fickle. I mean, back when they made Star Wars, nobody wanted George Lucas's script. Nobody would touch it, It was just too out there. And it took, what, I think an executive at Fox named Alan Ladd to okay it. And they never knew. Even George Lucas, from what I hear, he was very depressed on opening night. And he was, like, getting drunk at a bar.
Yeah, I think he
thought his film would not make money.
Right. And thank you for the phone call, Dino. And that's a really great point. Thank you for the phone call. And
thank you.
And also, Joseph Campbell, right? Hero's Tale. And then he went back and rewrote Star Wars. Could you imagine the old version of it? Hi, you're live on Fade to Black. Say hi to Russ.
Hey, Russ, how you doing?
Good, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. Hey, this is Kevin. I'm over in Gulf Breeze, Florida. Hey, Jimmy, I'm at Patriot App Rep. Hey, I just wanted to say I thought it was really cool that you just mentioned twins. I've got twin 2-year-olds, and I have noticed the same thing. They have a very similar consciousness, except one's more assertive and one's always more reserved. And I'm in a band with twins, and one tends to be more assertive, one's more reserved. One of them has twins, one's more assertive, one's more reserved. But great conversation tonight. It's really cool to get an insight on Hollywood and the entertainment industry, and just really appreciate the show, Jimmy.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kevin. And
thank you.
Did you have a question for Russ before I let you go?
Russ, have you ever had an experience, any sightings, lights in the sky or anything cool like that you can't explain?
Well, I mentioned the haunted house that we were shooting in. And, I don't know. There's a lot of theories about that, so I have no idea. I mean, I got spooked when we were shooting the film. I don't know if you heard that part of the conversation.
I'm sorry, man. I was also wondering, have you ever seen Jay Widener's film, The Kubrick's Odyssey?
I was going to bring that up. Kevin, thank you so much for bringing that up.
Yeah, no problem, man. It's a great film, and I know you've done a lot of work with Jay Widener. He really has some really good points, especially in regards to the the display in the background and the lines that are shown in the cinematography and everything. So
yeah.
I'll get off the air now, but thanks for taking my call, Jimmy. I really appreciate your show, man.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kevin. And he brings up Kubrick's Odyssey. Jay Widener is a filmmaker, okay? And he's also a researcher. He's an author. He's written some amazing books. And Jay made a film called Kubrick's Odyssey. And what he did in this film, now this is, take out your pen, Russ, and write that
down. Or my laptop.
Yeah, write that down. It's on YouTube. Just go and find a Kubrick's Odyssey. Jay Widener, W-E-I-D-N-E-R, Widener, Jay Widener.